I never met a lady quite as pretty as Melody Dean. And when I laid my head down on her heart, it beated out your name. And so I had to listen to her heartbeat several hundred times. And she was very nice about it, held my hand and didn't mind. I never put my foot in the same river twice, I don't like getting wet.
Welcome to Flame On, best of 2012. All the boys are out enjoying their new year, so we decided we'd put together a little clip show to highlight some of the best of moments from 2012. That includes some Gay Days recording that we did live at the Bear Den out in Gay Days. We got some segments from various things. If you've never listened to us before, we're a gay and geeky podcast. We cover all kinds of media, books, TVs, video games, comics, of course. We love our comics. And so this episode is really just a chance to kind of spend some time jumping around throughout the year, giving you some kind of best of moments. So if you've been a longtime listener, hopefully some of your favorite moments are here. If you've never listened before, this is a great jumping on point. Our first clip is some television we talked about back in January. So I hope you enjoy.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Exactly. Oh, have we all seen that in here?
Oh, God. Yeah. I thought it was a joke.
I want to still think that it's a joke.
It's not a joke.
The Wonder Woman with the flip hair?
It's
oh, my
not
God.
A joke. Stupid. It's like they took Batman Brave and the Bold as like an idea, but then they just dumbed it down.
Let's tell them what we're
yes.
talking about.
Oh, good yes, idea. Yes, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, I know Batman Brave and Bold just ended. Kind of people are thinking, okay, well, what are they going to do next? I think there's going to be a Batman series as well, but they're doing a new Justice League series, which at first think, oh, the last Justice League series was awesome.
Uh-huh.
Some of the best DC
I got
animated.
So excited when I heard it.
But then we saw the, I guess, pilot or the first episode or whatever, and it starts out with a fucking Super Friends theme.
Because it is a new Super Friends.
Yeah.
DC Super Friends is called now. Mm.
And it's terrible. The characters are stupid.
They're stupid. Oh. Everyone has
I didn't
their
even
old
watch the whole.
Costumes.
Did you guys watch the whole episode?
I watched the whole thing.
I watched 5 minutes.
I kept thinking at the end they were going to make some joke or it was going to be something that's obviously a parody or something.
I thought it was just a thing for the toys.
Guys, I think DC is trying to troll us.
I think, please be the case because it's so bad.
And I'm like, okay, so.
It's for a different audience.
And it's for the kids. So they're making the Justice League for the kids, but Young Justice for the adults? Because they're very dark.
It's backwards. That's
exactly. That doesn't make sense to me.
And they're not the new outfits either.
No,
Batman.
Batman
has it close to the new outfits.
The little lines.
Everybody else. Wonder Woman has no chest.
Has no chest and has flip hair. Has the 50.
So she's a tranny, basically. See, if I'm gonna be attracted to Wonder Woman, she better have big boobs.
Boobs.
She cannot be a man wearing that outfit. Just doesn't do it.
And she does. She does. Actually, she does. She's a drag queen.
Yeah. It does it for you.
Yep.
Oh God, you would. So let's all boycott that, shall we? If we're gonna boycott something in this world,
that
let's
just
boycott
looks terrible.
That.
But it's for the little kids. It. I mean, if my nephew gets into it.
Yeah,
I guess I
might get them reading books, but
you're giving
it.
Him more taste than that, I hope.
It's Wesley.
So, speaking of flat-chested Wonder Woman, actually, I don't know if she's flat-chested.
No, she's got big-ass boobs. Okay. Erica Durant.
Tiggle bitties.
Lois Lane from Smallville, formerly of. She is Wonder Woman on Harry's Law? What?
All I heard is that she played a woman who thinks she's Wonder Woman, and she was in the new costume that they used for that pilot.
Yeah, they borrowed the costume.
And she wore that costume. She looked fantastic in it.
Really?
She could have been. Oh, my God.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Storefront Heroes on AMC. We talked a little bit about this, I think.
You have to read the whole thing. Storefront Heroes on AMC? No, just Kevin Smith doing a reality TV show about comic book retailers.
So this is actually kind of funny because our dear friends from a comic shop were also pitching a reality show based around a comic shop. In more Star Wars news, we have Star Wars Underworld.
Well, wasn't that for the longest time they were trying to get this show? Was it the same show? I know years ago.
It's the same show they've been working on for years now, almost probably a decade. And it's set between the third and the fourth movies, so in this long era of the Darth Vader rise and the Empire taking control, all that. But what's fascinating to me is that it's picking up sort of the themes from the Old Republic, which I think in the Old Republic universe, they spent a lot more time exploring the smuggler underworld culture.
Right.
So it's interesting that they're seeing that now.
Are we not
going to
see any more freaking clones? I'm done with this clone.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to see the soldiers.
Well, the soldiers I don't mind, but let's make a 10-year epic out of the clone saga.
No. Oh, so, well, no, because no, after the Clone Wars. It has to be after.
This is after. When they're the Empire now.
You know, Darth Vader, the way he got his start was he overcame the Black Sun criminal organization.
Oh, is that where that? Because that's in the Old Republic, too, the Black Sun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to have a sort of a crime war with them. And that's
that'd be interesting.
Oh, so this is might show him becoming into power.
Yeah, like how he sort of
got to
the level of Darth Vader.
But now, will it be like Terra Nova that they spent so much money on special effects that you never?
Well,
it's not going to.
McCollum, who's Lucas's buddy, who's like the producer guy, he said that they're not making the show anytime soon because the scale they want to do it on.
Years.
Yeah, the money's just not there.
I'll be dead, so I don't care.
Are they gunning for? And I'm only using it as an example. Are they trying to gun for a Game of Thrones overarching, very high sci-fi?
That might be
space opera.
That might be what they do eventually, but like I said, right now it's all talk. Basically, it's all talk. So we'll see. Now, I have to admit, I have not finished American Horror Story.
Oh, I did.
But I know enough that we can talk about this.
All right. Well, do you know what they're going to be doing?
They haven't said.
Oh, yes, they did.
Well, the specifics.
Yes, the season finale ended.
Yes.
So now I was curious. I'm like, some new people could move in, but I don't want to give too much away, and I didn't know what they were going to do with
place.
It. But now it is actually American Anthology, and it's going to be a totally different thing.
But they
thing.
Haven't said the setting.
No, they didn't say exactly what it's going to be, but they signed on for 3 seasons total,
I think so.
So I think it's 3 seasons, but it's going to be a totally different American Horror Story.
What shocked me the most is Constance, or Jessica Lange, will not be back. At least in the second series.
She can. I mean, if they got to do a different setting.
I know. And
but
that
I thought
bumps
she was.
Me out.
But, I mean, if they stick with it, they got a brilliant cast to do this, and if they keep that going.
Well, they did say that some of the same cast will be back, but in different roles, which is interesting. Because it's like, well, in TV world, usually you don't do that without being like the Darrens from Bewitched. Or I'm sure there are other famous examples of recasting. But, I mean, they're going to use the same people for different roles. Actually, so it's the inverse of that.
So I've been following the story. Brian, do you know what happened in the end?
All I know is the story's over. I don't know specifics. I don't want any specifics.
Okay.
But I know it ends.
So it's just the final one you haven't seen, the season finale?
Like the second. It's just like two-part. Yeah. But it ends, and they're going to do something different next season. And I think that's great.
I think that's
interesting.
Brilliant.
No one's done that if ever, it's been a long time in a TV series, So I'm excited.
And I hope it keeps it going because it was dark enough, entertaining enough that I loved it, but dark enough that I was scared. I had the heebie-jeebies.
Speaking of dark, I know you don't watch Vampire Diaries anymore.
Oh, God, no.
But haven't you been loving Secret Circle?
Oh, Secret Circle's so good!
It just came
so
back.
So good. What's
her
name? What's the girl's name?
Cassie. Cassie Blake.
Who's now Phoenix.
ABIC. She is... I love this show. It still has a lot of the same tropes as Vampire Diaries. Like, there's always a dance.
They never go... Yeah, exactly. They never go to class. They're always in dances.
They're all trying to sleep with each other. But the storyline is really good. The character development for the ones they're focusing on are fantastic. And, Brian?
No, he has it over there.
Oh, yes.
Okay, I didn't know you.
I didn't lose my... I'm pouring some wine here.
What happened was Brian broke his wine glass, shrugged, and poured wine in anyways.
Hey, I'm a hardcore party.
But that's been fantastic. If you love magic, cheesy high school dramas, definitely watch Secret Circle. Vampire Diaries,
it
I don't give
terrible.
A fuck.
Even though we don't always play that many video games, and quite frankly, we really don't read as many books as we used to, we do occasionally talk about both, and this segment coming up isn't a great example of that. The segment that follows it is actually one of the coolest things that's ever happened to us as a show. We actually got to go up to a Comic Con, Heroes Con, in Charlotte, North Carolina this past June and represent for the Nerdy Show and for Flame On. And one of the treats of that was to getting to host a bunch of different panels. I got to host probably one of my favorite writers of comics right now, Jonathan Hickman's Image panel. So it was him and some of his writers for the various Image books he's doing, and I had a really good time. So enjoy this clip about video games, books, and Jonathan Hickman.
GamerCon!
Woo!
I saw a Kickstarter was launched today for GamerCon, which is going to be a gay, funded and themed gaming convention. It's gonna have other things too. I think they're gonna have comic books and TV and movies where they get it. But it's going to be in L.A., I believe.
And I thought it was San Francisco. Is it L.A.? The Kickstarter is out of San Francisco.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I don't know.
Well, he's going to be in California. Let's go with that.
There we go.
And it's by, I remember a couple years ago on IGN, something that really inspired me to get writing was a guy did like 10 rumored to be gay video game characters.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Sort of a funny article. And it got...
Blanca.
Actually, Yoshi was on the list and some others.
What about Zangief?
I don't know about him. No, I don't know.
He should be.
It was a while ago.
This is an antiquated list. Long before IGN.
Shush you. I'm old.
But he got a huge response.
Yeah.
And, but now I noticed that he was one of the people who's the founder of it.
Mm-hmm.
And him and some other people. And a guy from a comics website as well. And so go fund their Kickstarter, you know, if it's still up when it hits the air.
I would love to go to that. I mean, I hope that it doesn't just do gaming, because gaming is fine, but I hope it's like gay, geeky stuff.
It is like more of a gay,
then we should totally
thing.
Go.
Like any convention you go to, it's not just one thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or like most conventions,
the
I should say.
The presence would be a lot bigger since it's out on the West Coast.
Yeah. So
we need to go.
It's a lot of great like thought went behind it, and just letting, because, you know, in any video game that you go and play, and if in like a public setting, like immediately like homophobic comments are made.
Yeah,
and,
that's gay dude.
Gamers are the most conservative group of
right
nerds
and like
out there.
Yeah.
Like they should judge.
Yeah. So
you haven't
like
met nudists
shower.
Yet. Actually, they're pretty concerned.
Yeah. So, anyways, so go check that out. And then also, what's this Final Fantasy?
Fiat Rhythm. It is a music game with all the music from all the Final Fantasies.
No.
Yeah, and I have it right here.
Oh my!
It is so much fun.
I'm turning off my microphone.
On a whim, I was in a bad mood, and I was picking up pizza for dinner, and I went to GameStop. Have not been to GameStop in years. Just so you know. And I heard about this game. I played like a brief demo at work because my buddy brought it in. And I bought it. And it was the last one on sale. And it has like a little stylus that you put a sticker on depending on what your favorite Final Fantasy character is. All the games are there. Every soundtrack or most of the soundtrack from each of the games. And you play it like Guitar Hero / Rock Band / DDR. I mean, you know, pick your favorite music game. And you use a stylus to kind of, you know, hold down the things and tap in rhythm. Anyway. If you like Final Fantasy and you like music games.
Just so you know, this is my first time using a 3DS. So I'm just like, oh my, it actually...
Don't let it burn out your retinas. Careful.
I'm trying to be careful. I'm just like, this seems really must obey the hypnotone.
Anyway, great game just came out. Awesome. There's a Deadpool game coming out.
Suck it, Wolverine.
Yeah?
Which I don't know how it's going to play or anything, but it looks like it could be a lot of fun.
I'm interested.
It looks like it has a lot of like personality to it.
Yeah.
And
as Deadpool
very
should.
Deadpool. Yeah, so we're looking forward to that.
What is PlayStation All-Stars?
PlayStation All-Stars is Sony's version of Super Smash Brothers.
Oh,
they're taking all their
okay.
most signature characters like Kratos from God of War and that scary clown guy from that car driving game, Twisted Metal.
Oh, yes.
As you can tell, I'm a huge fan.
Crash Bandicoot's
Bandicoot.
In it? Nice.
Now you see why
Princess,
I gave you the mic?
A bunch of other characters. And, you know, they're on the same stage and they jump around, do their special moves, and you get points for KOing everybody with your specials. It's very, very similar to Super Smash Brothers, PlayStation's version.
I love Super Smash Brothers.
It looks cool.
I'm excited.
Super Smash Brothers is probably my favorite game ever. So, I'm very excited for that.
I keep hearing the tones from the game, and I'm like, ooh, what's that? So,
Wait, I have a question.
You do?
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Can you... Okay, remember in FF7 where you were in that parade on TV?
Yeah.
Does it have that song?
I don't know. I don't know if I've done Final Fantasy VII yet.
Oh.
I did 4 first, because I love 4.
Play,
like, you don't have to play them in order, but you do play, like, an entire game's worth,
uh-huh.
and it's, like, the overview, so it may or may not be, but that's a great song.
Okay.
It should be.
I'm doing more investigation now.
All right, you keep investigating. Jared, what are you playing these days?
Oh, what am I playing?
Yeah, you're always playing something.
Well, let's see. I started playing Terraria.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, I got it.
You like that Terraria game? It's very popular among the, I don't know, Steam crowd. Jacob loves it.
I got onto Steam, and, you know, this gateway opened up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just been playing my MMOs.
Yeah? What MMOs are you playing?
Ion or
whatever. I've heard good things of that, too, although I never really tried it.
Very pretty.
A lot of angel stomping.
Angel
I don't know.
Demon stuff.
You like that kind of thing.
Yes.
Is anyone playing The Secret World of Arrietty?
I have friends who
what?
Are...
What? No, it's good.
Oh.
Don't do that.
got excited. I'm like,
sorry,
what? Ghibli?
I remember I talked about the Secret World.
I remember you talking about it now. Okay.
I have not had a chance to play it, unfortunately.
It's actually been getting good reviews. Yeah. So.
I know
it's
everyone's
a Funcom game, which is strange.
I know everyone wants to know how my characters are doing in Old Republic.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't played them in 2 months. I still have a subscription.
Have they gotten on their knees and removed their clothes?
Oh, no. No, my guild probably thinks I'm dead. And no,
they've
but
actually
I...
actually role-played missions looking for you.
That would be hilarious. No, it's been so bad, I have not played that game. And I keep paying the bill. And I do intend to go back.
Oh, no.
And supposedly it's free-to-play.
Unsubscribe,
they're doing free-to-play now.
Unsubscribe and do free-to-play.
Well, but I already have that level 50. I don't want to... I want to do stuff.
Get rid of it, man.
Take off my clothes and talk to people at bars, as was my...
Brian told me about some of his role-playing adventures.
We talked about it on the show. You were here.
And I don't think... Well,
it was embarrassing.
Let's move on to books, then.
All right. I'm not reading. I'm not reading.
I just finished a book called The Name of the Wind, which I talked about on the show previously. And
did
it seemed
like
to bore everyone to tears. A
little bit.
But it's actually a really good book. I'm just going to say that it's kind of like Harry Potter meets... Lord of the Rings, through the viewpoint of a person, like the author, he had just gotten through school, and he sort of put all those funny things and some of his hobbies like into the book, and it's very involved, it's very funny, it's very what? and I would recommend reading it. The second book's out, and the third one's coming out soon. Patrick Rothfuss is the main actor, or sorry, is the author, and he's
I missed it. I was
okay. Also, in the novelization of The Dark Knight Rises, there's a mention of the Joker. Like, there was a big hole in the movie because they didn't, you know,
wasn't
mention
like
the Joker.
Talia supposed to go look for him.
No, I don't know where you heard that. The line is, actually, I think I have it right here. Hey, Jared, could you read that?
The worst of the worst were sent here, except for the Joker, who, rumored had it, was locked away as Arkham's sole remaining inmate, or perhaps he had escaped. Nobody was really even sure. Not even Selina.
So there you have it. That's the line that references the Joker in the Dark Knight
Rises.
Really? That's the big line?
It's so like, okay, what the fuck?
Who
cares?
It's vague, but at least it acknowledges him.
Yeah.
I saw, I think it was the IGN UK podcast guys who said there was a Joker-shaped hole in the Dark Knight Rises because that sort of presence wasn't there, and they didn't even mention him.
Yeah,
so.
It was a necessary thing, I think, and I know no one was very clear on. I'm not going to have him referenced because he's, you know, it's gone, he's dead, it's out of respect, that kind of thing. So.
Right.
Whatever.
So, okay, moving on.
Before we get into the comics thing, I do want to say real quick some bookkeeping stuff. As you know, we've been off for a little bit of a break. Not too long, actually.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of traveling.
We are, and we are going to be going to some Comic-Cons coming up. And we went to a Comic-Con. We should probably start talking about that, actually, a little bit. Q and I drove up to Charlotte with Cap and Tony from Nerdy Show. We went to Heroes Con. Q and I were the hosts of the Jonathan Hickman image panel.
Well, Brian was.
Well, you were a part of it, asking questions and being the man on the floor.
Were you bitchy? I assume that you were bitchy.
Oh, well... He asked Hickman a question that Hickman basically just like
so you
shut down.
No, but he
wasn't bitchy at all.
Hickman, I think didn't like where the questions were going, and I asked a follow up question, and he was just not having it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it was a great experience. We had a great time. We got the handle.
You can listen to that recording of our panel.
It is on the stream. A couple things up.
Job.
Thank you. I did okay for my first time.
Do you say? Hi, my name is The Question. I'd like to ask a question.
No, actually, Brian forgot to introduce me at the beginning, so I felt really awkward.
Oh,
there.
Did I really?
Yeah. Hi, I'm a no-name person who wants to harass you about your work.
Well,
I actually said something about him in a comic book review, and it was written on the back of the hardcover.
Yeah.
FF.
Did you bring that up?
Of course.
No, and so I brought it to him, and he thought that was great, and he signed it for me. Which
oh, sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. That was really cool. I mean, Jonathan Hickman is one of those irascible guys that he has a very distinct sense of humor, and if you appreciate that, it's hilarious. But if you're the victim of it or you just don't get it, it's going to be awkward.
So I got a question. What if, are there any future plans for Pax Romana or Red Wing?
I think we're done with Red Wing, aren't we? Yeah, I just want to work on Manhattan projects.
Tell him how long. Tell him how long you want to work on Manhattan Project.
I don't know. Like, what was it? 8 years? 20 years? I don't know. A long time. But
he's got like 240 issues left.
Yeah, it's good. Nice. We got a lot of cool stuff coming.
It was the 10-year plan, 25 trades, yeah, something like that.
Well, eventually those living people won't be living anymore, so you can start using them.
This is true.
I did put the Red Wing helmet in Grove's office, and Hickman deleted it. So, yeah, it's definitely not interconnected.
This is true. Every year when people die, we look through the list to see who's interesting, so we can stick in the book. So, I don't know. PAX one day maybe, but I think we're done with Red Wing. I think we're happy with what we did there, and you know, we're just going to do Manhattan projects for a while now.
Awesome. Anybody else? Who else got a question? Yeah, right here. I've heard you have notebooks, John, like just labyrinthine drawings and.
Yeah, I'm a little dysfunctional in the way that I can kind of keep all that stuff straight in my head, but you know, like. With Marvel, all the Fantastic Four stuff, like, I knew that whole story, like, from day one. I mean, very little of that was ad-libbed, right? So that's a 3-year run, and I just knew it, right? Secret is more like that than Manhattan Projects. Like, Secret, I know where we're ending up. Manhattan Projects, I'm intentionally, for the first time ever, not doing that. Like, I'm trying to intentionally not work ahead. Like, I'm conscious. Like, I know when I do something with a certain character that I'm going to come back to it at some point. That's just craft stuff. But for the first time ever, I'm not knowing. I'm intentionally not already working towards a predetermined conclusion. Does that make sense? So yeah, I'm not keeping it straight in my head on this one. Who knows what's going to happen?
Plus, you couldn't because I would derail it because I draw like really quirky stuff and write him. I draw him into corners with his writing. So
nice.
Well, that is true. Nick and I are working kind of a lot more like old school Marvel style on Manhattan Projects than we are working straight script. He's a little bit of jazz in there, right?
Yeah, it's cool. It feels really collaborative. It's cool because, like, if I want to try something, Hickman will write something cool. Whereas if I try to do it, it would be very literal, and he makes it smart. So it's a good mix of, like, me being awkward with the art, and then the writing is strong. So it really feels collaborative and cool. So.
Speaking of Fantastic Four, I am enjoying the series so far, and I'm looking forward to how it's going to end. I know that last year everyone bashed at you for killing off Johnny Storm, but then recently you brought him back. Was that, like, part of this question, was it your intention to bring him back like that, to kind of, like, make us think he's dead, but knowing comic book rules, they have a tendency of resurrecting characters back from the dead? Like, did you already know he was coming back?
Yeah, all that was in my initial pitch.
Okay.
You know, all of that stuff, how he comes back. The only thing that I had in the pitch that we did not get to do was... you know how Ben became like human?
Yes.
Right? And he had that week, and then he got to bang his girlfriend finally. She was going to get pregnant. Alicia Masters was going to get pregnant, and Ben was going to be a dad. And she was going to be delivering the baby when all the world-ending stuff was happening at the end, right? Okay. And when Johnny came back, all of that stuff would tie into it. That's the only thing they told me that I could not do.
Okay.
Because we want, Marvel is very interested in not aging the characters.
Okay.
And they think that giving a character a kid or marrying characters and stuff like that it complicates the intellectual property. Okay. And they're right about that. But it's one of those things where I was like kind of bummed because it would have been pretty cool.
Right.
So.
And so how do you intend to end the story? Like,
I'm not going to tell you that. How am I going to end the story?
Like, on a very satisfactory note?
I feel, I mean, it's going to be, yes, you're going to love it.
Extremely underwhelming.
And on my last question, for Manhattan Projects, what direction will you continue going down with the story? Like, do you tend to just keep making it so vague, or will there be more secrets that will be revealed as it keeps going?
Well,
because I know that you don't want to end it right now, so.
Things are going to continue to evolve, and we're not going to know, entirely where it's going. But our entire goal is to give you a satisfying chunk in every issue and tell you a complete story in that one issue while building towards other stuff and hopefully making it the most fun book on the market. I mean, sounds that's good. What we're trying to do. It's supposed to be fun, and evil. But evil and fun, right? Yeah. So, thank you.
Oppenheimer's going to eat an alien's brain at some point.
Oh.
Maybe. Maybe.
Will that cause the alien to be one of his personalities or something?
No.
Is that how he transfers it?
We're working on it, maybe.
Over there.
How hard is it to keep Nick from getting secrets out of Omaha?
Nick thinks that nobody's going to love him if he doesn't tell them special information. And so Nick is... What is that? What's the philosophical? Liability.
I like that.
You're what's bringing us down now.
I like it.
This is like the second book that Nick has ever done, and he's so excited. And that's the joy of working with Nick. He gets up every day, and he's like a rabbit. He's so jacked to get drawing and. And it's just everything is fun and everything is awesome, and he wants to talk about everything, and he wants everybody to know what's going on, and he's like a kid at Christmas. That's what it's like. It's like a kid at Christmas.
I have an actual question. It's called Manhattan Projects. So I was set up for a facade up there. We'll get to the bomb eventually. But I don't know if anyone's cut out, but it's already blown. So their cover's blown. The bomb's gone. So
yeah.
I'm excited to see how they're going to keep it. How they're going to keep the charade going.
Oh, I think it's a mistake to think that megalomaniacs want to stay in the closet.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'll just ask Nick. I'll tell you.
What's the difference between Ryan and Nick? Well. One has one is very well endowed, the other is not.
Nice.
That's an imagination.
That's so awful. So awful.
John why he knows.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. You would think that mass and weight would not be. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so that's a volume joke, dude. Let's see. Working with Ryan is working with both of them is wonderful. It's why I'm working with both of them. The thing about it is working with Nick makes me feel like a kid. It makes me really excited to work on the book, and it just makes me smile, just talking about it. I mean, it's just a shitload of fun. And I mean, I absolutely love working with him. I've loved Nick's stuff since the first time I saw it. I have been Nick's biggest champion.
Yes. I've only worked with John, and he actually got my first job in Marvel.
Nick pitched to be the initial artist on S.H.I.E.L.D. over at Marvel. He's got pitch pages for that are amazing. Obviously, we were fortunate to get Dustin Weaver on the book, but I mean, I've pushed Nick for everything that I've done because I just love working with him. And so that's what working with Nick is like. Working with Ryan is entirely different than that.
Opposite.
Ryan is a craft junkie, and he's interested in everything being meticulous and perfect, and He's always like I'll tell Nick some insane shit that we're gonna do, and he'll be like, "That sounds awesome." And I tell Ryan that some insane shit that we're gonna do, and he's gonna be like, "All right, well, I'm not sure if that works with this and this and this and this." And I'm like, "All right, fine. You're right on one of those points, and I concede. But I would rather you be more excited and just do what I say." And so Ryan, working with Ryan makes for a better crafted story. You know, and so, I think we're producing two really good books. I do. I mean, I'm super excited about both of them, and I feel super privileged. But yeah, it's radically different. It's radically different.
From comic books to bears, Flame On covers quite a variety of topics. This past year, we had the opportunity to explore one of those, the bear community, in a bit more detail. We actually attended the Gay Days Expo in Orlando, and specifically had a booth in the Bear Den, which was a little sub-convention in the larger Gay Days Expo. That was actually where we got to meet our very own bearskin rug, Pat, who helped put this show together and helped me find all these great clips that we're bringing to you. So Oral, Eric, Jared, and myself were out there, and we had a great Sunday recording some audio and really just getting into trouble. Sometimes that trouble comes from our very own Oral, who just loves to open the library and read us for any little perceived slight that we give him. So before the Gay Days clip, you're going to hear just a little taste of Oral.
Let's go where the bears are.
I am embarrassed. Have you seen this yet? There is a new... I just watched Bear City the other day for the first time. And it was really good.
Do you have it?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, no.
But it was really good. So this is sort of like Bear City, but with a murder. And more funny, I think, than Bear City was. And it's serialized. So it's a web series about bears and a murder and how the murder happens and all the hijinks that follow. It's called Where the Bears Are. I will talk more about it next time when I've seen a couple episodes.
Speaking of web series,
yes,
Jono,
yes,
told us about The Out,
yes,
which I've been addicted to,
really,
and I'm super happy.
Jono from
did.
Geeks Out,
yes. The Out is a web series about like what do you do after the breakup. It's really funny. It's super smart. It's kind of like HBO's Girls meets like Logo, but not in that like low budget Logo sort of way.
You pull all these analogies.
Not the Noah's Ark of the Logo. Okay.
First of all, you back off. Noah's
WB. Sorry. CW and CBS.
Everyone, pause. Hit the brakes. Pump, pump. Fuck you.
What?
Fuck you.
It has nothing.
You had to go for the only black show Logo.
No, it has nothing to do. It has nothing to do. You know I love my black men.
Yes. I've seen them all come in and out of your house.
Oh. What are you spying on me?
Third grade, you were still singing Donna Summer in your bedroom.
Actually, I was singing Donna Summer right there.
May she rest in peace.
Oh. We actually haven't talked about that.
I know.
I got a text message from Eric, and I'm just like, what? What? Yeah. And you know what? I will say this. Donna Summer, I wasn't a huge fan, but I was a fan. But she was actually the first. Well, no. You didn't hear me out.
Do you want to slap him or hold him?
Take his card. No.
Oh.
Excuse you. Bad Girls. We have MacArthur Park, which is actually one of my favorites. But my favorite Donna Summer song, besides Last Dance, is This Time I Know It's For Real. Because she had the Blossom hat. She was making a comeback in the 90s. It was great.
Wow.
It was great. And everyone was doing the Running Man. Everyone was doing the Running Man.
Including you last night.
Including me.
Sorry. Lord.
A song. And like when she passed away, she was my first concert. I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, I didn't know. Oh, maybe you told me that.
Yeah, it was really sad. But you know, she went out like a champ. She didn't have any huge like
scandals. She wasn't in a bathtub.
You know, back the hell up. Off. Back off.
Yeah,
you
just
know. You, everyone knows.
Cocktails everywhere.
Everyone knows. You do not badmouth Whitney in front of me. What, you don't do it.
It's the truth.
No, you know what? But
I love me some Whitney, but let's keep it real. Homegirl was in the bathtub and had just done a gram of Coke, had just taken. What are those other downers?
You know what? But they were classy. They were classy drugs.
I never thought Whitney would die of a drug overdose. I always knew she was a mess, but I just thought she was like a fun mess. Like, that would always be a mess until she was like 70.
Technically,
until she
drowned into a bathtub. Was drowning.
It was drowning. It was.
Because she passed out.
Because she passed out.
Who hasn't passed out in awkward, inopportune places?
Well, not in a bathtub. Why, Brian? Were you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, with you in the dumpster.
I've never lost consciousness of my own volition or whatever. No. Mm-mm.
But
yeah, Whitney.
I know you love her.
Oh.
Hello.
Oh, I'm so hurting. I'm so hurting.
Yeah. Donna Summers and Whitney.
You can do your Whitney tribute later.
Okay.
Oh, will you?
Oh, God.
I did so emotional last.
Duet?
Did you? I'll do it too.
Oh, duet.
Okay.
You get Whitney Mariah, Someone You Believe.
Oh, God. Whitney and Mariah. Are you going to bitch slap each other?
Oh, you know what? You know, actually, funny story. I was at this bar off of iDrive, and they do karaoke there, too. And I saw two busted queens sing Count On with, like, one was CeCe Winans, one was Whitney. It was both terrible. They were both terrible. Terrible. I'm just like, and that's not a key. Like, I don't sing on key. I've got like, it's like I have to go through the key ring. I'm like, that's not it. That's not it. Okay, I'll stay here. This kind of works by Jimmy the Lock a little. And like, but oh, it's terrible. It was bad. It was bad.
Or was calling a locksmith to get the right key.
Oh. Is that a Sharky? Yeah. We have a karaoke celebrity over here. We got Sharky over here.
Sharky?
Who's yeah.
Sharky? I'm not familiar.
He is a karaoke celebrity.
Busy. He's trying to buy one of my shirts.
Well, we won't interrupt that.
Stop.
We will not interrupt buying a shirt. Which,
speaking of yesterday,
yes,
Brian, you and I did not go to the parks, but we had a wonderful dinner at the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
We did at Boma's.
Boma? Yeah,
Boma's.
It was so good. If you're ever in Orlando and you're looking for something different,
if you want to pay $40 for a soda and some African quote food, it is amazing. Amazing.
It sounds like it's very filling.
No.
I was stuffed, but only because I just didn't eat a lot. And it's African food, so it's kind of sits where
it was.
I
was very. No.
Did you liked it, though? Right?
I liked it a lot, especially their ginger and carrot soup.
Now, the ginger and carrot soup is amazing.
It was so refreshing.
Yeah. And the curries, they have like a couple of curry soup, and they got like.
Chicken curry soup,
and they have some hummus. They have different hummuses, of course.
Yeah.
What else?
Like, I mean, freshly made.
Oh, and rum cakes or something that we had. Zebra cakes with rum.
I was just like, what mulatto child thought this up?
Really? Nice.
I've seen alcoholic.
Oh, we got some more hot people coming in with a fake mustache. Oh, is that on your glasses?
That's so ingenious.
Nice. That's so nice. Ingenious. Good job. Good job. So we haven't really talked about where we are for Gay Days. Not really. So we're in the Bear Den, which is basically way over by
the
Bear.
Did you say Dare Den?
Bear.
It's coming
bear.
Up.
Did I say
it's
Dare?
It's coming up. It's coming up. It's coming up. It's coming up. It's Dare.
Wow. Wow. Over my head, too. So we're in the Bear Den, way on the other side of the property from everything else in civilization.
That gets cut out.
No, it doesn't. No, it does not. Because we knew it was going to be a little off the beaten path, but we didn't know how far into Egypt it would be.
But, you know, it's been a blast.
Yes,
everyone
we have had.
Has been super nice, including those gentlemen.
Oh, my God. I love and I own your shirt. I love it. Rock out with your cock out. Awesome threadless T-shirt. Fantastic. Another karaoke regular, I think. What's your, I don't, Matt and Pat. Oh, I did not know that. With a great voice.
New people. I'm sorry. Good.
Orleans, on the spot.
What's your name?
Matt.
Josh now.
Matt, welcome to Flame On. It's a gay nerdy podcast. That's flameonshow.com.
Fantastic.
So what are you doing here? How are you enjoying your gay days?
I'm enjoying them very much.
Oh, what have you done so far?
Basically hung out at the Tidal Wave
host hotel for the most part.
Which one was that?
Tidal Wave.
The Royal Plaza on over by the Disney.
Oh, see, nice area, nice area. Meth heads are, you
Girl,
know,
put that mic closer to his face.
I'm trying.
Up in it like a
slap.
Dick.
He needs
there
slap.
There we go. All up in the face right
That's
there.
Better.
Right there. Right there.
Do you need towel?
Does this seem familiar to you?
Oh, my.
I plead the fifth on that one.
So how do you know everyone?
Let's see. Pat is my best friend.
Bears in the City.
Yes, got to love him with his Bears in the City. And Chadwick.
Hi, Chadwick.
Is a dear, dear friend as well. And Ramon is also
Ramon.
One of my best friends.
Oh, Ramon, hi. How are you?
With
my
the awesome
Oral.
T-shirt.
Nice to meet you. Flame
so you slept with everybody.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Which Sex in the City chick are you then? I want to know.
Which one was I? I guess.
Charlotte. You're Charlotte.
You're a Charlotte?
I never really watched the show, so I'm like, which one am I?
Whatever was left? Is that what you did?
No, he's our young, naive one.
Oh, well, yeah.
He's the eternal optimist. So.
Oh, well, that's good.
He is me, though. He's yet to
be jaded. Wait a minute. Wait, hang on. Wait. Pat, which one are you?
I'm Carrie.
Of course. So although Samantha probably would have worked.
You're a slut that thinks they can afford a fabulous apartment?
Our bear in Vietnam is Samantha.
Oh, that one. Oh. Oh, he's old. Oh, that yeah, makes sense. That makes sense.
Ah, right? True.
Old whore.
The old whore. It works.
Matthew needs to be listening to this.
Yes. Yes. We will make sure he does. And
then yes, Jay, yes, we are recording. Ramon, now that you've we're recording,
the lesbian?
Do you have anything to say? Have you?
She just got married.
Yeah,
you know
did.
Cynthia Noxon just got married?
Nixon, yeah.
Yeah.
To a man.
Nixon, Noxon.
It looks
Nixon,
like a man
Nixon.
Anyway. I thought it was a man.
It's gay day.
She's the more like feminine of the two.
She looking like a man.
She looking like a man.
She is music royalty. Chaz Bono has gone through so much in his life.
Oh, no.
That was great.
Not Chaz. You know, she could kind of hang out here, actually. She'd fit in right in. She'd be a good bear.
So, how are you enjoying gay days, Ramon?
Yeah, we have to.
Stop talking, Brian. I'm talking now. I'm interviewing.
Back to Lois.
So, I'm sorry, you were saying before you so rudely interrupted?
So, I'm having fun so far.
Okay, what have you done? Besides the man standing right next to you.
Well.
Just drinking and hanging out.
But you're not rocking out with your cock out? That's what you are wearing, sir. Well, what the hell?
Well, last night, yes.
Oh.
But what about today? All
right, good. At least there's something.
Today's relaxing.
Today's relaxing? Tired? Mm. You know, ginseng will take care of that for you.
Or 10-hour energy drink.
5-hour, 10-hour.
Is there a 10-hour? Oh, I just double shot it. I don't know. Whatever.
Now we're back to Whitney in the bathtub. Circle of life, you people.
Lord.
Well, do you guys have any plans for later on today?
I'm just hanging out before I head back home.
Okay. Where's home?
Tampa.
I'm sorry.
Everybody's here. Everybody here from Trampa. What the hell?
Stand for Barrioke and then headed home.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
what are you going to sing? What are you going to sing?
It depends. I'm not sure what I'm in the mood for today.
Oh,
maybe some
moody.
Alternative.
Really?
Three Doors Down. Stuff like that.
I'm looking forward to that.
Some what? Who?
David Cook.
I don't know who that is.
He was one of the American Idol winner people.
That explains why I don't know who that is. Oh, he's hot?
He's very hot. No, did he win? No, he didn't win.
Yeah, he's no Taylor Hicks, I'll tell you that.
He was hot.
Sorry.
That reference is lost on me.
Really? Oh, you don't watch it. That's it's the only one
Wikipedia.
I watched. Yeah, wiki it, bitch. Get your phone out.
Look, I'm still paying $29.99 for the rest of my life to Britannica. I ain't switching.
Nice.
Oh, look at that. Ronell disappeared.
I know.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, no problem.
And you too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Man, you are Lois Lane, Johnny on the spot. You are the new question. We don't even need the old one. He's just gone.
Like we ever did.
Oh, snip it out. Snip it out. Oh, they're gone. No.
In addition to our normal episodes where we review media, throughout the year we also throw in our 101 episodes. The 101s are basically single topic episodes that are all about a single thing. In this case, we've actually pulled a couple from this year. We did an episode with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence here in Orlando, Florida, and we talk about the sistery of their organization. And then we follow that up with the Gendersode. This was actually an episode that we were sponsored by various fans of our show, and they outpicked this topic, and thankfully this was the topic that won out. And then the third show we're going to highlight here is our Jean Grey 101. This was actually a special project by Pat and Eric, our resident Phoenix fans, and they spent quite a lot of time talking about their very favorite X-Men, Jean Grey. So hope you enjoy our 101 episodes.
Let's get a little history lesson in here, because I don't know much about the Sisterhood.
I'll take the helm. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence started in 1979 over in San Francisco, California. A bunch of guys moved there from Cedar Rapids and had done theater stuff back home in Iowa, and they said to Abbey of Nuns, hey, we're doing Sound of Music. They weren't doing Sound of Music. And we need these nun habits. Ha 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 ha. And the nuns gave them these old, retired for real nun habits, and they just kind of stashed them away. They did a couple drag shows with them, and then when they moved to San Francisco, it was one of the few pieces of drag they moved with. So fast forward, it's like a year later in 79 in San Francisco, and it's like Easter weekend, and they're like, let's throw on these habits.
Just
for fun. It's Easter weekend, whatevs. And they threw on the nuns' habits. One of them in particular painted his face white because he used to do that and take weird photos of himself. Questionably
more
intoxicated.
On that later.
So he threw on the face, and they went traipsing down through the Castro district, which at the time had the whole Castro clone look, where, you know, you wore tank tops and had this very masculine appearance, and here comes these bearded drag nuns floating down the street blessing people on Easter weekend in the Castro, and people were not prepared. It was a wonderful image, and people loved it. People were calling out, my sister, blah, 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 bless me, my sister. And it was this sweet, funny, like, okay, you know, there's this conflict in the Castro betwixt the Catholic establishment and this new gay community that's growing up there. And they just kind of put a fun spin on it. And then just, like, years later, over the next couple of years, they started getting invited to, like, social activism fundraisers and a Cuban refugee crisis event. They invited them to go and put the fund basically into fundraising for the event, and the sisters kept on showing up. They went to a nuclear crisis nuclear crisis
in times of
Three Mile Island thing happened, and there was all these, like, you know, questions,
protest parade.
Yeah, exactly. And so the sisters got invited to that, and they found themselves kind of smack dab in the middle of what traditional sisters would have done, basically being advocates for peace,
right,
inclusivity, ministry to the community, fundraising for charities in need. And they found that, you know, they could really be the vision of what they were accidentally, jokingly, you know, portraying, but be it for real, for progressive-minded and LGBT communities.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up starting the first AIDS candlelight vigil before AIDS was an acronym. They broke all sorts of societal taboos, not just about gender, but about religion and open-mindedness. And they basically, for the last 30 years, have spread chapters throughout the world. There's one over in Seattle that was the first one, and then they migrated down to Australia. And
wow.
Then France, Paris,
Berlin,
and then they spread all the way across the United States.
Or within Berlin.
Yeah. Oh,
it divides.
It's like mitosis over there, right?
Oh.
Now. Like, one group will split, and then we have four chapters. And yeah, now there's chapters everywhere. There's a rogue group in New York City. There's a new chapter that just started in Dallas-Fort Worth this last year.
Wow.
There's one in Birmingham, Canada. Alabama. There's Canada, Toronto. Mm-hmm. There's a large squadron of sisters across the world.
A plague.
Yes.
A plague of nuns.
A glitter infestation throughout the world. But each chapter shares the same common goals of trying to banish guilt, spread joy, bring joy and unity to the community, and put the fun back in fundraising, as I said, and try to help their community as ever, however best they can. So every chapter has their own flavor.
The same overarching principles with, I would say, local.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So tell us then about when and how Orlando's chapter started.
Ooh.
You were never able to do it.
A few years ago.
Uh-huh.
A few years ago, I actually came in right in the midst of, I believe, what year was it that we actually...
I don't think we had. We were still an aspirant group when you were joined.
When I joined, we were still an aspirant group, and then I would say about 6 months into my postulancy, we then gained our full profession, which means that we are officially a part of the house. But they'd been working towards it for a year up until then.
Yeah, three different nuns, myself, Sister Isabella Ringing and Sister Magina Burns. Isabella was from Seattle, and then Magina was from Tampa, and they both had previous experience working with those houses, and they both were like, hey, we want to start Orlando House.
Right, and you contacted them, didn't you?
Well, I contacted the United Nuns Privy Council. There's a council of the United States houses.
Of course.
And they oversee, basically, since, you know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence name is a trademark, they want to make sure new groups that want to start a chapter are going to give it a good name and not run away with...
So there's a process for starting a house.
We were just discussing this.
It's pretty regimented,
actually,
too.
There's an underlying threat of anarchy, but all within the confines of of some sort of order, and yes, absolutely.
There's
a regimented process by which your house becomes a fully professed house.
But basically, in short, they like make sure that you do X amount of fundraisers for your community or community events, that you're making good resources and contacts with your community, that you draft your own good mission and bylaws and get your look going, and most importantly, register as a nonprofit organization.
Of course, that's got to be
the IRS, which
key thing.
I had
lots
never made bylaws before.
Oh, but, yeah?
But sitting there and filing that away was, oh my, why. Yeah.
See, I was in, and I am in, a fraternity, and every time I've heard about your process and some of the things, to me, it sounds like a fraternity.
It has that, yes.
Or sorority, if you will. Yeah.
It has a sororal aspect to it, I would say.
Lots of process. There's very regimented sort of initiation paths that you take. You have different statuses, and you mentioned a couple of them, like the stages of development that you're in. Talk about that, I think, because that's kind of interesting.
Well, when you first begin, you're an aspirant, and that just means that you're an interested party. You would like to know a little bit more, then you come to a few meetings.
Okay. No dressing up, nothing.
No,
yet.
You just come to a few meetings, and we want you to see what we're all about, because some people come into it just seeing all the glitter of it, and they don't see all of the work that goes into things. And
they might just see you at an event, and that's all they know.
Right. And we want them to know a little bit more about what our mission is, and we want to make sure that they're on board with that mission. Mm-hmm. And then if that still appeals to you, then you can file to become a postulant. And a postulant, you'll see them out wearing gray. Some people refer to them as pre-nuns. That's been my favorite so far.
Pre-nuns.
She's a pre-nun.
Oh, my Lord. Yes. Delicious.
But yeah, it's this really austere habit, basically.
Yeah, it's Maria and the Sound of Music.
Yes, exactly.
The little Velcroed headband with the veil.
To me, it's one of the most nunly looking things that we actually wear, I think. I think it's cute. So it's the postulant grays, and should you choose to continue, and it follows basically the steps that a Catholic nunnery would follow.
Similar, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But we never try to be too cloak and dagger with it.
No.
It's not to, you know, keep people out.
No,
or...
no. It's really more of your process of coming to become a fully professed sister, and it's your own personal journey, and however long that takes you is however long it takes you. And so what you would do after that is you would find a big sister, so there's a mentorship part of it, and then onward from that you would go into being a novice sister, and you do a novice project, which is your first foray into fundraising work and some sort of outreach. So this all takes about a year, and then the fully professed membership votes, and hopefully you become a fully professed sister. But as any fully professed sister should tell you, it doesn't end there, because there's always going to be something to be learned and some new insight into your community and into why you did this, and those reasons, for me at least, change constantly.
Yeah, the same reason why we have the mentorship process in the individual level was the same reason why, you know, the nationwide houses have their basically accreditation, for lack of a better word, processes. They want to make sure that the person's heart is in the right place, that they're doing this for the right reasons, because everyone out there can do drag and do, you know, throw on the glitter and the lipstick and have fun. But, you know, the fact that you're doing it to help your community and that you really, at the end of the day, aren't doing this for, like, ego reasons.
Right.
It's really to go and help others. Yeah. You just want to make sure that they've got that process down and even learn that most important part, the novice project, seeing like, hey, this is how you put together a nonprofit fundraiser.
Which is a really valuable thing to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. Very much so. I went into it knowing very little about putting together any kind of community event, and I absolutely learned a lot from it. And I what's great is you've got that process built in, so you have all these people that have done it before you, and you know what not to do right off the
this
bat.
This is a
hopefully.
Check disbursement form. Mm-hmm. This is a this is how you get a 1099 for a nonprofit organization. Do they fit with our organization's goals? Paperwork, paperwork, paperwork.
Paperwork. Oh.
But it's great. It's that backstory.
The women in comics now today, like especially when it comes to Marvel, they seem to be the most powerful. And all the teams and stuff, they are the most powerful ones.
And
I've always wondered, I don't know. I mean, for me, my little fandom of seeing the more powerful is because I am a gay man. I look at myself, not that everybody does, but I look at myself as a weaker. Mm-hmm. And to see women so powerful kind of gives me inspiration or gives me that power to fall back.
That diva mentality?
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's where they are now. I would say that starting back early in the comics era, they were very much in, like a lot of other literature, the damsel in distress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then later became the, what is it, the girl in the refrigerator?
It's a woman in the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a terrible.
Yeah. Which I had not really read much about, although I do recall the issue from Green Lantern.
Yeah. I remember that one.
Well, evidently.
Why don't you, know?
Question, I don't think we were alive then.
Actually.
Let the listeners know.
You were sucking on your mommy's nipple.
Where did this term come from?
Well, it came from an issue of Green Lantern when Kyle Rayner. Rayner, thank you. Sorry. I have a friend in Kyle Rayner. Kyle Rayner, his girlfriend was killed by force majeure. Is that?
Major force
or whatever.
Force majeure.
They make it like all fancy. It's DC, for God's sake.
It's a playoff force majeure.
I'm surprised it wasn't force man. Or force boy.
I can't believe you're hating on DC. Anyway. Anyway, so he kills her and stuffs her in his refrigerator, Kyle's refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And it spawned this whole internet thing led by Gail Simone, now a very prominent comics writer who's a woman. Prominently a woman as a comics writer, too, but see that as it may. Started this whole internet thing back when it was more like bulletin board style internet, and had a lot of other people chime in about all this women and their terrible, terrible victimized roles in comics.
And it's used as a plot device rather than being a legitimate character.
Yes, very much so. Whereas now I think a little bit more, hopefully, is character driven, like what happened recently with Mockingbird and, you know, the different, you know, female characters that have been, you know, injured and then empowered, and even Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel now. But
for those of you who need a layman translation, think old school, like 80s, 90s, Jean and or Phoenix and
Rogue?
No, not Storm. Rogue. No, not Storm. Sue Richards. How it's always pop up the force field. Oh, Scott. Oh, Reed. And now, like, Ultimate Sue can, like, hold back tidal waves with her mind. That's cool.
Well, she did, like, as the years progressed, she was able to. There was, like, I think Terrax took up New York and started bringing it to space, and she put a force field over the whole thing.
Wow.
I mean, blood's pouring down her face. It was graphic.
Ooh.
But it was pretty good. I mean, to see her do that, and she was like, shut up.
But, I mean, you know, again, this is more recent, but back in the day, it was a plot device, and it was, like, you know, damsel in distress, the woman on the railroad tracks. That's what I keep thinking of when I say damsel in distress, which actually, damsel in distress goes back even further, but, I mean, this is an old archetype in media of all kinds. TV,
well, I mean,
movies,
yeah, look
literature,
at,
everything.
Look at Batgirl. She had a purse with lipstick and a compact.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, no, was it Batgirl or Batwoman? I think it was Batgirl.
Well, Batwoman definitely loves the lipstick.
Yeah, and they had like the compact that she would get the fingerprints. You know, shit like that that she would do. Yeah, like that was the super. But Wonder Woman, wasn't she a little bit more?
Well,
I mean, she was a dominatrix to begin with.
Let's talk about that. Back up here. If we're going to get into Wonder Woman, her origins, she was written by a very
strange,
sexually
repressed,
adventurous psychologist who actually was doing research against comics, and the comics industry, DC, specifically, co-opted him to write this character. And he based it on his very interesting personal life, where he had a girlfriend and a wife in the same house, and all of the early Wonder Woman stuff is completely like bondage everywhere.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And mostly her, which is kind of funny because he was talking about how he was trying to give a female version of like Superman, very much pro sort of woman, but the way he wrote it was pervy and totally like sexy bondage stuff.
Well, so, that's why, like, in the original series, that's how she lost her powers. Like, every time she was bound by a man,
yeah.
She was powerless. I'm like, huh.
But what about that one chick that was, they called her Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman.
That was a woman villain.
Yeah, but now in the most recent Wonder Woman arc, when she takes off her bracelets, like, her literally takes off her shackles, she becomes, like, wildly powerful. And she becomes Zeus's daughter, like fully fledged, and beats the crap out of Artemis. So completely symbolic and growth for the character there.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean these characters have come a long way. Unfortunately, I'm sorry I said
like
that.
Like Virginia Slim.
Yeah. baby. But I think there's still even to this day sort of a misuse of women in comics. One of the writers I read pointed out that women characters are oftentimes killed off for dramatic effect, but they're not brought back very readily. Whereas the male characters, it's just a matter of when, not if. And they didn't cite any examples of that, but I'm sure if we put our thinking caps on, we might think of some woman. Well, Sue Digby, not Digby. What's the...
Dibney.
Dibney.
What the hell's wrong with you?
I don't know. I'm
Do you
sick.
Read comics?
Shut up.
He's sick and he's drinking beer.
Identity Crisis is on my shelf. Shut up. But, I mean, what's his name's not back either, so...
Yeah, Ralph. So, I mean, happened, but...
What's his name's wife? The Adams' wife. The one that killed everybody.
Jean Loring?
Yeah.
Why do I know this?
I don't know. And you were just dishing on DC.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Eric, since you're a huge fan of Jean Grey, I want to understand why you find her appealing. What empowerment do you feel from Jean Grey? It's the same sort of effect that so many other gay men have towards Wonder Woman.
But, okay. Do I tell the truth or do I give, like, the nice comic book version?
Give me the comic book version.
All right. The comic book version is... I see this character that, for me, to looking at Jean Grey, she's the most loved in the X-Men. Like, she's been dead for so long, but almost every story arc wraps around her. She's still so prominent.
Well, hey, the evolution from Marvel Girl to
Dark Phoenix, you know, the progression, her growth. I absolute power. I love that. I'm fascinated by it. I'm intrigued by it. It would take me 5 minutes before I would destroy the world if I had the power of the Phoenix. And to see her do that, to see her struggles with the Phoenix Force, and to see that power that she possesses to do anything, to enslave the human race, that's right, what I want. Not everybody thinks about this.
We're getting into sexual fantasies now, so let's just...
I didn't say man, I said the human race. I kept it, you know... diverse.
Well, I think one of the things with... Well, I'm sorry.
The rug is talking.
I need to signal in the rug. Rug talk. I think one of the things... And I love Jean Grey. And I have for a long time. And, you know, kind of talking about the role of women, especially in the comics. And I grew up with X-Men. That was a huge part of my life. And from the, say, mid-90s on... I always kind of looked at the women as being kind of that oddly powerful. And I get the damsel in distress, and, you know, I think of Snidely Whiplash and, you know, old Dudley Do-Right. Like, I think of all those things when you talk about that. But Jean Grey, I think when it comes down to it, is almost kind of like the mother figure. And because she is that, she's the heart and soul of it all. And I see where you're coming from with the Phoenix part of it. You know, and I love Dark Phoenix Saga. Above and beyond everything else, like, I've been reading, I've gotten back into reading some of the stuff. Thank you, all of you. But that whole piece of it, when it came down to it, and, you know, obviously it wasn't really her, but it was that struggle of heart versus power and trying to find that balance and seeing somebody that was able to wrap all that power into everything, and then whether or not it was just the embodiment of her persona in the Phoenix that took it to that next level where it had a conscience, it had a heart more than anything else.
And she was so powerful enough to put it at rest. And I love that. I love to see her, that the growth of her to do that, even though it did turn out not to be her. But just to see all that just fascinated me.
And I think no matter what is that either which way, it was almost a reciprocal venture for the Phoenix at that point, because with bringing Jean back, no matter what, it almost was like a piece of the Phoenix lived in her while a piece of her lived in the Phoenix.
Right.
And that's why, and then after they brought her back, you know, from the bottom of the ocean, she kept on that progression because of the fact that the Phoenix was a part of her at some point in
time. Right. When they did End Song, they explained that they neither can survive without the other anymore. And I did like people ask me, they're like, okay, who do you want to see? Do you want to see Phoenix or do you want Jean Grey back? And I much, because she's the heart and soul, I'd much rather have Jean Grey.
Exactly. You know, yeah.
Just to see a bitch slap Emma.
Ooh, wow.
Well, but she won't. Well, anyway. I think Pat raises a great point, though. The X books have, I think, historically, more than any other series, been very pro-woman empowerment. Having such a rich character. I mean, they have, you know, Rogue, Shadowcat,
Storm.
Well, look at Storm. I mean, back in the day, she was the leader. Powerless, she beat Cyclops for leadership of the X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, and she was leader. It was the first, never mind African-American woman.
Yes.
She was the first woman that was in charge of a big team in Marvel.
Absolutely. So I think the X-Books really have paved the way. And now you see with the Avengers a bit more of that. Although, I mean, the Avengers have had their strong women, too. But
well, they try. See, like, I see, like, the Avengers, even the Justice League. Like, I remember they had Black Canary for a second, chairperson.
Yeah.
And it was a joke because Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman still in charge on the side.
Yeah.
You know, so they still treated them like a joke. So it's like you'll still have, like, your Captain America, everybody will go to Superman or Batman, and they won't really take them seriously.
Going into the Dark Phoenix saga, the Phoenix saga, the Dark Phoenix saga, Eric, tell us about the intro to the first time the Phoenix was introduced into the X universe.
First time, I mean, right off the bat, how it happened is that she sacrificed herself. Like, she put Scott into a coma, threw him in, they put in there, what was that, that shielding.
Yes.
So the radio cosmic rays wouldn't hit them, and she was like willing to give up her life. And that's when the Phoenix calls out to her and says, you know, I could save your friends, I could save this. And I remember reading it when my friend gave it to me and seeing her body like totally deteriorating, like her hair was half gone, like you saw the radiation like killing her. And then that's when she was just like, okay, for them. So she didn't take the Phoenix because she wanted to survive. She took the Phoenix because she wanted her friends to survive.
Yeah, from the get-go, it was all about them, because that was the thing. And that's where we were talking about her telepathic powers being there beforehand, because she did learn how to fly the shuttle through telepathy. And then her whole thing was, I have telekinetic powers. I can put a shield up. I have the best chance of getting this to Earth in one piece. Anybody else that tries to do it isn't going to have that. As soon as those cosmic rays hit, you're dead, we're done, and that's right. It. So yeah, it was definitely that fearlessness, that self-sacrifice to say, you know what, if I die, it's worth it, because I'm saving the people that I love. And that's exactly what the Phoenix reached out for, and that's what bonded it to Jean Grey.
Saw her sacrificing and just said, let me help. Little do we know.
And then we have the iconic scene that is depicted on Eric's shirt.
My shirt, when she just comes out of the water, I am Phoenix.
Exactly.
And then drops like a rock.
Somebody catch me. I am life incarnate.
And if you ever watch the cartoon, if you look at her lips are quivering. Yes, people, that's how many times I've seen it. Yes, I know, I'm psychotic.
Which, the cartoon, I think, for being a kids show in the 90s on Saturday mornings,
mm-hmm.
really did a great job depicting the entire Phoenix saga, from the first Phoenix saga when she took the powers on and became the iconic green and gold Phoenix. Yes.
You know, that I could teleport the whole team into the spaceship with Lalandra, but then I have to drop. Then I can't do anything to help you from there on in. I never understood that, but I was like, okay. I could pinpoint Scott with accuracy. Oh, there he is.
She always had bursts of power.
She did.
And then had to take a nap.
We like to call them siestas.
She went Spanish. Who knew? She is La Phoenix. Now I'm imagining this with this picture of Jean Grey with a sombrero on her head. Maybe we can get Jared to depict that as the art for this episode. But then we went through the whole thing with her being the Phoenix, and everything was all fine and dandy
until the absolute power.
Until
it was Mastermind, really.
I was going to say,
played with her.
It was Mastermind who kind of tripped all of the breakers in her head, because Charles, knowing that this was going to be, you know, something she needed to gradually
grow into
and become and live, put the psychic breakers into her head, so that way she did not have absolute power from the get-go, because we all know absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yay.
And I may be wrong. I don't have a huge definitive knowledge of everything before the Phoenix Saga. But this was, I think, the first really major depiction of the Hellfire Club.
That was the first appearance of the Hellfire
Club. It was, okay. Yeah, I thought so, I just wasn't positive. And that's where you had Sebastian Shaw, Franklin Pierce.
Donald Pierce,
yes.
Leland.
Yeah, Leland. Who's that? Price?
I know his last name is Leland. I forget his Wayland? Wayland Leland, something like that. Yeah. But he was the one who could manipulate mass.
Yes. And he's the one that crushed Wolverine into the sewer.
And then you had the White Queen, and between her and Mastermind.
And what was Mastermind's
Mastermind
role?
Can create illusions. Emma made them real.
Yes, but what was his? Because they all had chess names.
Jason Weingard.
But that was his illusion persona. Was he like the Black Rook?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that.
Because he had the White Queen. He had the Black King with Sebastian Shaw.
Right. See, I don't know Pierce. I didn't know if he had a title or
they all did, but they weren't really referred to. Emma was the only one who has never really had
anything else except the White Queen.
It's her name or the White Queen, and that was it. She never really had another supervillain name. Where everybody else, Sebastian Shaw, they all went by their names really more than anything else. But yeah, Mastermind popped himself in as Jason Weingard and took her back into medieval times and revolutionary times, and basically manipulated Phoenix into being the Black Queen of the Hellfire Club.
And a little bra and panties.
A corset. And her hair up in that crazy bun.
That big, huge bun.
I don't even think you can call that a bun. That's her sombrero right there. She wrapped it around the sombrero. I think there was a chin strap. I don't know.
Oh my god.
When we said this might be the gayest podcast
ever. It is
ever.
The gayest podcast.
It really is.
But yeah, she became the Black Queen, and she was just downright evil. But then the Jean Grey part that was still kind of there was the one that fought.
Do you remember how she broke free of Mastermind's hold?
It was
They captured the X-Men.
They captured the X-Men, and she battled. He was battling Cyclops, but she went and killed. See, I get mixed up. Is it the cartoon I'm thinking of, or the actual comic book?
I think it was. I think they were actually both pretty close.
Pretty close, right?
Yeah, they captured all of them because the X-Men broke into the Hellfire Club and they fought. That was the whole thing with Leland knocking Wolverine into the sewer, and then they had them all chained up. But because Jean and Cyclops still had their psychic link, he popped into her head in their revolutionary times, and they had the duel. Weingard and Cyclops had the duel. When Weingard won and stabbed and ran him through with a sword and killed, quote-unquote, killed him,
right?
That was what triggered Jean's breakthrough, as opposed to the Black Queen taking over and being a part of the Hellfire Club. And that's when she finally turned around and said, I'm not the Black Queen, and then made Weingard.
All right, I'm
going to
play something. This is how crazy I am. Ready?
I've already been freed, set free from the constraints of sympathy and morality that bind ordinary human beings. The Phoenix Force inside me aches for sensation.
Now, when I get mad, that's what I listen to.
I love that cartoon so much. That whenever I think of them speaking, it's always in those voices. All the time.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly how I hear it. And I have that. I have a few clips that I just, when I have my moments, I just listen over and over.
I've got the DVDs out in the garage.
I made sure.
I had to pack up a bunch of stuff. I made sure that that stayed out. I'm like, if I ever just have one of those days, pop in X-Men, volume, whatever, I think it's 3, Dark Phoenix Saga, and hit play and just watch them through. But yeah, so she broke free of Wingard and made him one with the stars.
Oh, turned into a fucking vegetable. I was just, do you want to see me how I truly am? I was like, whoa.
And he's gone.
And that was, I think, the first time that we saw that Mastermind was like this really ugly old man. That was the illusion.
Took away the illusion of Jason Wingard, and he was reminded me of a little bit of Toad.
Yeah.
Kind of toadish.
Very
looking.
Old.
Yeah.
Very, like, ugly. Ooh, yeah. So ugly. She was probably like, oh, God.
She's like, now that's why I'm going to show you how I truly am. So that was really kind of the spark that ignited the Dark Phoenix. And then she went crazy. They tried to stop her, and it took a turn for the moon.
It did.
From time to time, Flamon likes to bring on guests, whether they're in the studio or over Skype. We've had some great guests this past year. We had the Comic Book Geek. We had John O from the Geeks Out organization up in New York City. And we've had a couple other guys, Brett White, a writer from New York City, who we've gotten to know as well. But locally in Orlando, DJ Justice of Out Loud Orlando on 91.5, he's a friend of the store that we all go to, and he came on and did this great episode with us. I hope you enjoy.
What we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about you and I and the question going to Celebration. Star Wars
I
Celebration.
I left that off the thing. Well, let's jump right into that before we deal into the comic stuff, because not really comics. Star Wars Celebration, year 6 of
year
it?
Year 6.
This happened, what, 3 weeks ago, I think, now?
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks ago. We got a media pass to go to this convention, which was awesome because it's fucking expensive.
I didn't need the media pass because I have other connections.
That's right, you do.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to meet Chris Hardwick.
I got to meet Chris Hardwick, and my little, I freaked.
The Nerdist is a major, like, nerdy content.
Chris Hardwick.
And he's a former comedian, former host of.
No, he's a comedian.
He's a comedian.
Wait, the host of Singled Out?
Yes.
He is.
Other things now.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's how I know him.
Golden ticket. Jenny McCarthy, Singled Out.
Wow. Yeah. I forgot about Jenny McCarthy being on it. So he is this major, like,
how could you
nerd
forget?
Content. I, you know, whatever.
That was the whole reason people watched the damn show. But, I mean,
not
I guess
us.
It doesn't really appeal to this room.
She was funny. I enjoyed
tease
her all there.
Tease galore, man.
Exactly. I don't mind boobs. It's fine. But, no, so he was there and hosting some stuff. I don't know.
He was hosting panels, but I didn't get to see that. I only got to be there for a couple of hours. But it was super fun to walk around. See, it was cute. I mean, it's funny because, like, there's lots of Star Wars stuff to do.
Yes.
But unless you want to go to certain panels, you're going
to
be
kind of bored. The panels were outrageous. You had to wait in line for hours, and I know that's not uncommon at
Thursday,
these big shows.
Thursday, I didn't have
to. You're a Star Wars junkie?
I like Star Wars.
You went on Sunday, right?
No, yeah, I went. It was fun.
Why aren't you talking more?
Imagine going to a comic convention.
Right.
It's only about one comic book.
Well, yeah. But you know,
everyone's dressed up as the same character.
It was like there's 8,000 Supermans.
There were 9,000 slave Leias.
No,
half.
No, but the problem is half of those bitches don't need to be in slave Leia.
There were guys in slave Leia. It was
I'm sorry. If that's like, if you have like 10 pounds of crap to stuff into like a 5-pound bag, then you do not dress up like slave Leia.
Nice.
No, I got pictures with like a dozen Darth Mauls. It was,
did you?
It was awesome.
You love
and
Darth
we saw
Maul.
The Star Wars in 60 Minutes. Did you guys see that?
No.
No. Oh, man. Last year it was Star Wars in 30 Minutes, and they did the original thing, just like improv troupe,
right,
got up
right.
And just ran through all the lines, did all these like funny things.
Yeah.
And this year they did the prequels and the original trilogy, and it was hilarious. It was great.
The
it
only
was,
panel
it was worth the price of admission.
I went to two
that
panels. I went to the 1313, the new game that's coming out that looks amazing, and I went to the Anthony Daniels panel. And I will tell you right now, Anthony Daniels played C-3PO, biggest faggot I've seen in like, you know, on stage in forever, probably since I went to like Broadway. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Have you ever seen yourself perform with
since
the
I
mirror?
Hosted the Hickman panel? Yes. What?
Have you ever seen yourself perform with the mirror?
No.
Okay.
Well, what do you mean by perform?
Can we qualify this?
I have a picture on my phone of that. I have a mirror on my headboard, actually. I took the picture and I posed.
Yeah.
So never mind.
That's okay. You know, detail's good. So Anthony Daniels pranced around for an hour doing this shtick about trying to make fun of Star Wars fans, basically. And he brought people up on stage to answer Star Wars trivia questions that he couldn't answer. And he was he was brilliantly charismatic, but then he was kind of a dick to people too. It was kind of, it worked, but it was just awkward.
Is it C-3PO?
Yes.
And then I can feel a little bit sorry for him. If you were C-3PO and you've had people coming up to you for the last 30 years,
yes,
geeking out, nerding out, guys that live with their mom wanting you to do shit and talk to a robot and sign. Dude, I can see the seed of bitterness having grown.
But the man has made his millions by now, I'm sure, off of this thing. And he's still involved. He's a host of the Star Wars symphonic concert they do all over. So, I mean, the man has made a 30-year career out of, one series of movies he did. So, yeah, I could see him being a dick and kind of being bitter about it, but it's financed his whole damn career.
But imagine how many other times he may have wanted to try and do something else artistically or creatively, and he's going to be always pigeonholed into that.
Sure.
No matter what he does, no matter how talented he is or, qualified, he's always going to be the damn C-3PO guy.
It's true. I have to agree with Justice.
It's true.
Hart refuses to sing these dreams anymore, and I want them to.
I love, dude. Hart looks back on their career in the 80s and basically says, that was like coonery and buffoonery. We sold out. We sang songs we didn't write. We teased our hair.
Yep.
We did it. Those were our biggest hits, and it makes us infuriated, but it made us our money, and we admit that we sold out to do it. Hey, if you're on Netflix, The People versus George Lucas is a phenomenal documentary that goes in and looks at the change of Star Wars fans from the original to when they redid the scenes and, changed things. And did Lucas really have the right to do that to your childhood memory and then into the... Anyway, but it was a really informative documentary. So if anyone's a Star Wars fan, The People versus George Lucas is on Netflix, available streaming. I don't work for Netflix. I'm just saying.
We should have a Netflix promotion, though. That would have been very appropriate. So
we should all watch a movie on Netflix, with our viewers, and do commentary, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
We've talked about this. This is a very controversial topic.
But it should be to the Rainbow Bright animated movie.
I love that movie.
Or He-Man She-Ra Secret of the Sword.
We'll do a Kimbra.
She's truly outrageous.
Kimbra is a dirty lesbian.
Think about it. It's a nerdy show, flame on, new crossover, where we do riff tracks for Gem and the Holograms.
Cap will be all
Cap
up on that.
Cap is all over that.
He practically is a hologram.
Speaking of Gem, have you seen the...
Jizz
episodes.
I just saw that.
Kimber is the dirty
Everybody
lesbian.
Needs an abortion. Come to my concert and get an abortion.
Motherfucking butterfly.
I had never seen
motherfucker,
that.
Motherfucker.
See, I'm so jealous. On my radio show, we're not allowed to curse in any way, shape, or form. Tuesdays at 4 o'clock on 91.5 FM, outloudorlando.com. But yeah, you can listen to that radio show.
If you're watching the chat,
No.
75% of it's just...
No, it's not. I just went in three times and was hey, but then no one talked back.
Did you know every time I
we can't even say hell, damn, or ass in the show.
You can't say hell?
No.
Per FCC-wise, you can. Per the... contract station on WPRK, who I love and I'm very grateful they get me
exactly.
But anyway, but yeah, for their rules we can't, even though we have a 16-second delay. So it really is the task of, and I have to wrangle in drunk drag queens and try and get them not to curse.
Every time I guest star on the show, I'm just oh God, please don't let me curse. Oh God, please don't let me curse at my alma mater and shut down the radio show.
Right.
Oh God.
Well, thankfully, we don't have that limitation. So,
fuck balls, ass.
Exactly. Get out while you can. So, let's talk about some comics, because comics are cool.
Mm-hmm. So I thought we were going to talk about the whole night. I don't know what this other shit was.
Yeah.
I didn't look up the Google document.
No, it's okay. We had a very busy last couple weeks.
Okay, yes. I'd like to say that nobody went to Dragon Con. Let's not talk about it.
Please?
Let's not talk about it.
Ron is a huge fan of ours. Huge fan, went to Dragon Con, represented for us, took a buttload of flyers.
Represented for Flame On.
That's why I brought it up.
For Flame On and for Barrioke.
Oh, thank you so much, Ron.
He scored us interviews that we are going to be doing in the next couple weeks with comics creators that do gay webcomics. So we will thank Ron.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that at all.
Yes.
Maybe I should actually look at the doc.
It's okay. If you come to Barrioke more often, you can actually find this out because he's there all the time.
Who?
You can come to the Tuesday night.
Big
one
black
that's not
man,
kind of
crazy hair, sings kind of crazy. Anyway, so Dragon Con, if you went, great. You saw Ron, fantastic.
Where
I'm
did
sorry.
Dragon Con take place?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Hot Atlanta.
I saw a YouTube video that had been posted. These two guys have been together a couple years. They recreated the wedding of North Star and
Kyle.
Black Kyle.
Yep.
So what they did was they were dressed up as, you know, just a black guy in a tuxedo, and the other one was dressed up as North Star, and someone was dressed up as Doctor Strange and yelling at everyone. But anyone else that was dressed as a hero was assembled to like watch the wedding. So when you first see it, you're like, oh, they're recreating the issue of Astonishing X-Men. But then you start looking at the audience and you realize that there's like the wrong characters are there and people are dead and there's like more than one Moon Knight and you're like, why is the wizard at the wedding of North Star? So then I start getting really pissed off that they're like really effing up the continuity of gay Marvel wedding. I was like, the lizard doesn't want to see them get married. He doesn't even understand what's going on. Like, what are you doing?
Actually, North Star was our friend Brian that we met.
Yes.
Wait,
which one? The costume guy.
Yeah. Well,
your buddy.
He was dressed.
Oh, you know the guy that did.
Yeah,
it?
Brian.
Oh, that's
and
cute.
His like sort of partner husband.
I didn't know
of,
that.
Yeah, that was the same guy.
I didn't even see the pictures. Okay.
What con did we go to?
Charlotte.
Charlotte's
con.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Ron.
Like,
we
someone
really
was dressed up as like the Red Skull, and like he's in the audience clapping for the gay wedding. You're like, no. Nazis don't like that. I thought it was going to be a funnier joke in my head. I take that.
No, that was good. That's good.
Failed miserably.
So, in addition to that, I went to... Oh, go ahead.
I just want to mention, Paul, the gay comic geek,
was there. Yeah, yeah,
and he did Iceman.
It was good.
Entire body blue.
It was really good.
He just wore a pair of underwear.
Is he still in good shape? Because the last time I saw him... He wasn't really kind of carrying the standard of like sexy guy anymore.
He still has 8 abs, so I think that's good looking.
Were they drawn on or
like that?
Yeah, the one thing that you don't know, Justice, is that the question has this very soft spot for the gay comic geek.
That's cool. I don't have abs,
awesome,
but I play rugby and I kick ass and have a lot of.
See,
like
I find that more attractive than the abs
no.
thing. So I don't know.
You will be mine.
you will.
Oh,
be
Oh yes,
mine.
You will be mine.
Keep the receipt.
You don't even know it.
Oh, nice.
No returns allowed.
What better way to close out the year than with probably one of the most vicious things Oral's ever said on the air? I hope you enjoy this, and we look forward to recording some new episodes very soon. So stay tuned. And on that note. Flame off.
Well, we're just keeping in mind that your mind all night tonight has been on chicken. You realize this, right?
Oh, my
right?
God.
So we're just waiting for the
I did not make
reference.
This. I am not.
I'm just saying.
Nothing
I know
to do.
I'm going to regret saying this, but it is quite amusing.
Seriously, I'm out of this conversation.
It was the bear rug that noticed it. Sorry, under the bus.
Well, time to take all three of you out.
Oh, boy.
Your husband still won't sleep with you, Eric.
Correct. The library's open.
Jared, I've seen better wigs on Who Did It in Random.
Oh, shit!
And Bear on the Floor, did they knock out your teeth when they shot you buckshot, or was it just...
Oh,
you're just terrible.
Uh-oh, watch out. Return fire.
And there we go.
I just want to say, remember who fed you when you got to the house?
It was Barry.
All right.